The Tom Woods Show, episode 629.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're in the business of selling things, this message is for you. My man Daniel Levis is shutting down his instructional work he's been doing for the public over the past couple of weeks on email, and he's closing it off just for members of his Email Alchemy Elite program. So take this opportunity to see his last live demonstration to show you exactly how to devise a successful, winning email marketing campaign and how to make it easy on yourself. Check it out at tomwoods.com/Daniel. Friends, if you don't have the time of your life aboard the Contra Cruise in October 2016, then what can I say? I owe you a Coke. Bob Murphy and I are hosting a cruise that's going to be full of fun and games and music and fellowship and making new friends. A ton of fun. ContraCruise.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I've had a few requests to talk to Sibel Edmonds, and I thought to myself, I guess I've been meaning to do that anyway, and for some reason I haven't gotten around to it till now. So she is with us today. Sibel Edmonds, I'm going to let her tell most of her story, because it would ruin all the fun if I told you all the details now. But let it suffice to say that she worked as a translator for the FBI, and, well, let's say she discovered a bunch of things that she wanted to tell people about, and other people didn't want her to tell those things. So we're going to get more details in just a minute. She is editor and publisher of Boiling Frogs Post and the founder and president of the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. I'm going to have a whole bunch of links related to Sibel and what she's up to today at tomwoods.com/629. So please make sure not to miss that. Sibel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Tom.
There are a lot of topics you and I could cover, but I thought this first time that I'm having you, we should talk about your story, your overall story. If people hear your name, they think back to, you know, about 15 years ago or so, around there. And so that's where I'd like to start the story. You began as a translator for the FBI, which seems like an innocuous enough occupation. And I'm sure when you began as a translator, you had no idea where that job would take you.
Absolutely. I began my work with the FBI 4 days after September 11, 2001, after the September 11 terrorist attacks. And I served two functions for the FBI's Washington field office, both as language specialist translator for three languages, but also that's Turkish, Farsi, and Azerbaijani. But I also performed analysis because of my background, political background, and knowledge of these countries that were the targets of certain investigations or the operatives from these nations. And that would be Iran and Turkey and several countries within Central Asia and Caucasus, including Azerbaijan, because they also speak various dialects of Turkish language. They are Turkic root languages. And let me just say that I never planned working for the government. I never wanted to work for the government, not only here, but anywhere else in the world. I grew up skeptical of governments, big governments. My father was a known surgeon in Iran. He was taken in and tortured for the kinds of books he was reading and handing out to people. I went through a military coup in Turkey in 1981, implemented by NATO and the United States. And we went through all the martial laws and the curfew. So I have lived in many countries to have this pretty good, strong desire to stay away from the government. The only reason I accepted the job offer, and they basically called and begged me, because they said, our country, our nation needs you, Ms. Edmonds. We have had this attack and we are still under attack. There may be more attacks. And with you, we get 3-4 languages covered, plus your background and your analytical skills. I have a bachelor's degree. I have two of them in criminal psychology and criminal justice. I also have a master's degree in public policy. So all those kind of were, I guess, attractive to them. And I couldn't say no, because I was just like any other Americans out there. This is, you know, I'm like, well, this is my, they are telling me this is my chance to serve my country and really my country, because other countries I lived in, I was either born in them or I lived them because my parents went from one country to another country, for my dad's work. They were not by choice my country. The United States, I came here in 1988. I decided, consciously made a decision to become a citizen. So this is my first and only country by country of choice. And I became a citizen by choice, not because I was born into it. So I said, sure. And I was pretty naive. I was very green. I was similar to many Americans that I get to see or hear from. I totally believed what I was given through my education in the United States, master's in public policy. I love the fact that I was living in a country with separation of powers and constitution, bill of rights, the system of checks and balances. Little I knew. I had no idea that these were illusions that were being marketed and sold to the public through the education, academics, and the mainstream media, and of course, Hollywood. So I was one of the believers. I was very green. I believed that they were not, they didn't exist only in theory, but that they, in fact, applied. Well, as soon as I started working at the FBI, I came across some major cover-ups on extremely important investigations, not by choice by the agents, but because of the higher-ups in the State Department and people within the CIA, basically hindering the investigations taken by the FBI. And also, in addition to that, I also witnessed incredible level of waste, fraud, abuse. I mean, things that if they were to really put it out there, and it should be out there, and I'm sure many people have tried to put it out there, and it's out there, that what the government does with people's trust and the tax dollars that they are cutting and collecting every month from their paychecks. And to me, that was an eye-opener, not only the cover-ups, but how these agencies were ran. And being an outsider, I was working for them as a contractor and someone who has always believed in the free market and efficiency. My husband and I, we've been married for 25 years. We have had our own business. It was surreal. It was surreal, the level of intentional waste, fraud, and abuse. And with the cover-ups and issues being significant, I tried to bring some of these issues to the attention of higher-ups within the FBI. Well, that was a major mistake because the problem actually was stemming from those higher-ups, the executive-level people. And that began a chain of reaction and retaliation. And then at that point, I said, well, based on what I studied, what I have a master's degree on, there are channels I can pursue. Yeah, I didn't go out there to media and leak documents. I believe there were appropriate channels, so it's my duty to take it to the Inspector General's office and have them look into these issues and do something about it. Well, the Inspector General's office for the FBI, DOJ, they work for the same bosses. So basically, you're going to the same people and asking them to investigate themselves. But hey, they said this is one of the so-called channels. I pursued it. That brought more retaliation. In fact, half a dozen or more agents stormed our house.
All right, wait. Before we go any further, I think people need to know what kinds of things were you reporting?
Well, in some cases, there were significant, important facts and related to counterintelligence investigations by the FBI that were stopped from being pursued via State Department and the CIA because the targets of those investigations actually had other working and operative relationship with individuals within the CIA and the State Department. So whether they were notorious criminals, let's say in movement of heroin into the United States from Afghanistan via Turkey and then Belgium, NATO's headquarters, and from there directly into the United States, or terrorism activities sponsored, strategically designed here in Chicago, in the United States, and then with the players being sent to areas in Central Asia, Caucasus, Middle East to execute terror attacks. These people didn't work for Al-Qaeda. They worked together with the CIA and a certain Pentagon unit. These were the issues that would not be within the scope of what the FBI agreed, and you could not investigate and do anything about really true investigation of 9/11 without linking and getting linked to players within the United States. And on top of those top of that chain, dealing with the CIA operations and certain Pentagon, joint Pentagon NATO operations overseas that were being handled from the United States. I know it sounds complex. I have received more gag orders than any other person in the history of this country. They invoked the state secrets privilege during John Ashcroft's Justice Department twice in my case. The Justice Department retroactively classified all investigations conducted by the United States Congress in my case. And this is after the United States Congress went publicly on record and they said all my reports and allegations were confirmed by other documents and other witnesses. But the Justice Department said, okay, now they're retroactively classified your results, the investigation results, and we impose gag order on you.
Well, what does that mean? What does that exactly forbid you from saying?
Okay. In short, it means violating Constitution and separation of powers, because you can't have the executive branch, the Justice Department, issue gag order via retroactive classification on the other branch, legislative branch, the United States Congress. They basically said, you investigated, you said this, you're going to destroy all these documents, we are collecting everything in your computer, you cannot even refer to Sybelle Edmonds, because under state secrets privilege, which they did via court, because I also went to court in this case, tried to get the case moving in court so I could bring in witnesses and expose all these massive cover-ups and the consequences of those cover-ups, and for the public's right to know. So the information, the truth would come out. And none of these were justifiably classified. It was not about some ongoing investigations. It was not anything that in any way could have been considered classified. They didn't want the public to know because that would have caused outrage. It would have exposed government's own illegality. Well, with Congress, even though illegal, this retroactive classification and gag order, they abided by it. I mean, and from both parties, Senator Grassley.
Okay, but I guess what I'm trying to understand is, what are you, Sybelle Edmonds, not allowed to discuss? What general subjects?
I am not allowed to discuss the fact that there has been an ongoing operation and that involves CIA, NATO, and a certain division within Pentagon that implements, creates terror events at home and abroad, whether it's in Central Asia, whether it's by using Chechens, by training and arming them and having them blow up a building inside Russia, whether it is training and directing another group to blow up a certain entity within Turkey, that these operations are not done via what they advertise to be entities such as Al-Qaeda, or in this case, I'm sure it is what they call ISIL or ISIS. When you look at it, these entities, like in 19, my counterintelligence investigations that I was working on with three FBI agents, and these were field level agents, they were good people, these guys. The problem was from the higher ups and the State Department, the CIA. In 1997, for example, we had counterintelligence recording by tapping certain embassies, let's say if it's Turkish embassies, from 1997 records, that had Ayman al-Zawahiri of Al-Qaeda with two very well-known State Department officials, including Mark Grossman, and Prince Bandar meeting in Azerbaijan, in Baku, in an embassy, and on how to bring certain, what they call terrorist groups from Pakistan and from Saudi Arabia into Turkey, give them fake passports and funnel them into the Balkans area, and there for them to have training camps established and opening up mosques, building mosques. Okay, the financing of it partly came from the United States directly, partly from the Saudi Arabia, but also the operation included utilizing the opium grown in Afghanistan region and then processed in Turkey. Turkey is a NATO member, NATO ally country. And then from Turkey being distributed and traveling through Belgium, United Kingdom, and also in the United States. You're looking at terror activities committed by the United States government. You're looking at illegal narcotic operations being actually directed and operated by the by entities within the United States government. And yet, the stories being sold to the public being that there are these boogeymen in Afghanistan and there are these boogeymen Islamists in Saudi Arabia. They are independent actors who have come up together and they are terrorists and they hate the way of life we have here in the United States. And lo and behold, they are attacking our interests around the world and in our country. It basically, everything that we had in the FBI contradicted the story being told from the government, by the government to the media, and by the media being sold to the American public. That would be the summarized version of what it involved. Well, that's why the gag orders, the state secrets privilege, in courts, they came before the judges, the Justice Department and FBI attorneys. And they said, even if she's right, she can't talk about those because everything she knows is classified at the highest level. In fact, we want you, judge, and this was Judge Reggie Walton initially, and then it went to the appellate court and to the Supreme Court, Tom. We want you to declare her birthplace, where I was born, her birth date, the languages she speaks, where she has gone to school, like university degrees, all classified. And the judge approved it. The judge said, and this is the exact sentence he said, during these terror situations, who am I as a judge to disagree with the Justice Department and the FBI if they are telling me this will bolden terror and increase our terror, the threats of terror. Therefore, I'm going to grant. For us, my attorneys and I saying, how could you declare my birth date classified? You know, if a police pulls me aside and says you were speeding, driver's license, please. What am I going to say? I can't hand you my driver's license because it contains my birth date. It is that Kafkaesque. But the fact that these Kafkaesque authoritarian police state requests from the courts sailed through the courts. So you had in federal courts, both at the appellate, later the Supreme Court level, for the judges to agree with it and saying, okay, yes, you can do that. Heck with the First Amendment. Heck with the due process. You can do that. The fact that the Congress can abide by an illegal gag order by the executive branch, well, that happened without any resistance from Senator Grassley, Senator Leahy. There were so many congressional people that they said, okay, if you order us, we'll do it. We're not going to argue with you. That tells you that neither our Bill of Rights nor these notions of checks and balances and the separation of powers really are at work or in practice. And if you were to challenge government's own criminality, whether it's criminal operations or covering up criminal operations, or it's fraud, waste, abuse with consequences borne by the American people, then there is no power above that government. And therefore, our Constitution Bill of Rights is conditional. It will get suspended if you are exposing government wrongdoing because government is the ultimate power.
All right, let me ask you, didn't you just violate the gag order by telling us?
I have been violating the gag order right and left, especially in the past 6-7 years with my book that we got a special order. It's already on the internet. Justice Department saying that they blacked out because I had to submit my manuscript for my book, Classified Woman. It's a nonfiction. So because of the contract I had signed with the FBI Justice Department, I was obligated to submit that to them. They had 1 month to review it and black out anything that was sensitive or classified. Well, they sat on it for 6 months or so, Tom, and they blacked out everything. They told my attorney every single word in that book is classified. She can't publish it. We are not going to release her from this order. She can't publish it.
So you published it anyway?
Well, yes. First of all, I went to publishers and I said, because I know I did not put anything that was justifiably classified because I know what is classified, what is not. And second, this is against Constitution and First Amendment. The publishers, all these major publishers, they said unless FBI gave its blessing, they were not going to publish because then the FBI was going to go after them. So I had to hire my own team, my own editor, my own book cover designer, and the fact checker and get this book produced and self-publish it via Amazon. And this is after the written letter forbidding me from publishing. They didn't do anything. Maybe it was this bluff. Who's going to blink first? Maybe the government is so used to federal government by issuing the threat for people just backing off. They thought that was going to be the case. Maybe they thought if they were to take me to court, it was going to bring more publicity for the book and the case and the issue. We are not sure exactly the reason, but I guess they knew with the mainstream media under their control, so there won't be any publicity, any reviews of the book in anything mainstream as far as the media is concerned, it would go away. How many Americans are going to know about FBI whistleblower from 14 years ago or at the time 12 years ago? And maybe they were right. But regardless, it was standing your ground and saying constitutionally they're wrong. You know, morally they're wrong, and I am not going to back off. And it's my right to publish it, and it's the public's right to read it. And I guess if enough Americans were to do that, whether they are government employees or whether they are just ordinary citizens, we wouldn't be in this position we are today, Tom. Unfortunately, that is not the case, because whether with the TSA abuses or with the NSA abuses or with the tortures and black sites, since really most people, they do not dare to stand up or challenge or do anything, we are seeing only the escalations of these police state practices, and things every day is getting worse.
Let me jump in here, because I want to make sure that we hit the key things that you said. As long as you're violating the gag order, let's go the whole way.
Yes,
here.
Let's do it.
I have a couple things I just want to clarify. First of all, I saw a review of the book. In, it's obviously not a very big publication, but in The American Conservative by Phil Giraldi, that was favorable.
Yes.
Phil's been a guest on the show, so that's good. But you're right about it is hard to get the word out about a book when there's an interest in not getting that, having that word get out. But also, okay, couple things here. First of all, you were a translator. You were not in policymaking circles. How is it possible that you came to have all this knowledge of everything the U.S. government was up to?
Well, not only that my work involved in the FBI with these agents, one of or several important ongoing counterintelligence operations that dated back to 1996, and I performed analysis for them because they didn't have any analyst within the FBI or Justice Department who was both language specialist, knowing the language, plus having the political background of these involved nations or players, which my background did. But also after the whistleblower journey began for me, the retaliations, polygraph, confiscating my computers, the court cases, I formed my own National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, and I have about close to 200 whistleblowers from the FBI and the CIA and the DIA and all these intelligence law enforcement agencies. And also, I have worked with people who later retired from the FBI on some of these issues, not only on my case, but on related cases as well. But also, the political knowledge that comes with my background includes certain operations that were conducted, directed by the United States, but conducted in places where I lived, including Turkey. And again, in many ways, it's different here in the United States. In a way, we are so isolated. When you are in Europe or in Middle East, you get to see many of these operations and policies actually in action. And even though in some of these, all of these third world countries, everybody recognizes them as authoritarian, under dictatorship. I consider, because having the experiences living in those countries, coming from living in those countries, and here for the past 28 years, that the situation of authoritarianism and police state practices is actually much worse here than it is in the worst dictatorship. And here is why, Tom. In those countries, there is no doubt in the minds of the public, okay, that they are living under dictatorship. I mean, you talked 99% of the people would tell you that they are living under authoritarian police states and that they are not, they have no rights and no democracy, all that. It's worse here because here with the illusion, you get most people, the majority, still saying, yeah, things are not perfect, but we are far from being, police state or fascism, etc. And that makes it that much more dangerous here because there is this denial here. There is, and as long as you have denial, you do not have any possibility, any chance for changing things, for throwing things away and building something new, or any kind of standing up because there is that denial factor. In those countries, they have better chance, even though they get influenced by outside big countries, than we do here in the United States, because people, they don't want to accept. They are in denial, or they are just honestly naive, like I used to be, saying that, sure, there is some corruption here and there, but we are the best. There is no other country as free as we are. And we do have, and then we celebrate our 4th of July, and we eat our hot dogs, we drink beer, we have the firework, and we declare ourselves as a nation of free, where the fact, where the reality is far from it. Thus, rendering us in a more precarious, dangerous situation than those third world countries with already publicly acknowledged authoritarian regimes.
Now, early on in the conversation, you said that the amount of waste, fraud, and abuse is just beyond calculation. It's beyond belief. But it seems to me that your primary accusation about the U.S. government being in one way or another involved in and behind acts of terror that are then blamed on other organizations is so much vastly more important than any waste, fraud, and abuse that you could uncover. That's the thing to focus on. So what kind of detail – I mean, this is a bombshell of an accusation, right? I mean, this would be – it's so astonishing that the accusation itself would make you seem not credible, because people would say this is impossible.
They would say it is impossible. Again, it comes again thanks to the mainstream media, maybe resistance by the people to actually even delve into history and context. That is not something new. Operation Gladio began right after World War II, and it is not a conspiracy theory. If you were to go and type it, it was NATO, US, and UK ran operation that said, okay, in order to counter the communism and Soviet Union, okay, and what we're going to do is we're going to create these false flag terror events in Turkey. And if you go to the list, these are confirmed lists. CIA's FOIA after 40 years have already put this information out. You will see these terror incidents in Italy, okay, that was conducted by the U.S. NATO forces, and then that was blamed on some communist faction in Italy or the Soviet Union. You go and look at Bulgaria and you see what happened there. You will go and see in Turkey. So these false flag operations, they are already confirmed. So what happened, Tom, is after the fall of the Soviet Union, that operation started shifting starting in 1995. And that's the counterintelligence operations I was working with the FBI agents in this specific, very contained unit within FBI's Washington field office. Around 1995, 1996, the operation, the original Operation Gladio, which I refer to Gladio A, shifted to Gladio B. Now, instead of creating these false synthetic terror events for the long-term objectives of the powers, the Western powers, and blaming it on the communism with the Soviet Union gone, it was going to be blamed on the Islamists. And that was going to pave the way, not only our way into the Middle East, but mostly, and this is again something nobody wants to pay attention or even know about here in this country, with the main targets being Central Asia and Caucasus. Saudi Arabia oil is not going to be here in another 10, 15 years. The long-term objective has been Eurasia. It's been all these natural gas-rich, mineral-rich, oil-rich nations surrounding Russia. Whether you're looking at Kazakhstan or Turkmenistan or Azerbaijan. So, for example, let me give you a quick example to you. In 1997, because my counterintelligence unit also involved a lot of operatives and people from Turkey, Turkish being my primary main language, there was this mullah, this imam, this extremist Islamist guy named Fethullah Gulen, okay? Fethullah Gulen was preaching and wanting to bring Sharia law, and Turkey, even though they had elections, they were still, and they are still, under the military regime since the coup in 1981. So they decided to jail this guy. Mysteriously, Fethullah Gulen got into a Gulfstream jet, CIA-owned, in 1997, and he was brought into Washington, D.C., okay? and worked with the State Department and worked with the State Department's another other puppet, and this is the guy they declared the United States State Department the president in absentia of Turkestan, which is the Xinjiang region in China. So basically they said, this guy is a president, he's the Washington, D.C., but because the objectives also include Xinjiang area, and this is again Turkic faction living in that portion of China, which sits on this very important pipeline for gas and oil. And by 1998, this man, this Imam Mullah from Turkey, Fethullah Gulen, began his NGO organization under moderate Islam here in Washington, D.C. and in Pennsylvania, okay? And right now, if he's still here, okay, if you go and put Fethullah Gulen NGO organization, it will give you the value of this organization in terms of financial power at $22+ billion, Tom. He owns the largest charter school groups in the United States. Well, our operatives from the CIA and State Department, under his name, with him, they began establishing more than 350 mosques in places like Azerbaijan and Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. Now, nobody knows where this guy is bringing his $22 billion. Nobody knows about the source of this, which goes to the heroin operation that is conducted by U.S. NATO via their proxy nation, Turkey, through Turkey. Now, those labs to process those poppies moved from Turkey to Azerbaijan. Currently, a lot of those labs are in Azerbaijan, and now they are able to do it in the source, which is Afghanistan, but they couldn't do that 15, 18 years ago. Fethullah Gulen is not a conspiracy theory. People can go. He's a Turkish mullah. He is worth $22 billion. He's the man. If they go and look at the number of mosques, by now it's about 380 plus mosques that we, together with Fethullah Gulen, we, the United States State Department and CIA, have established all over the Central Asia and Caucasus. Some of these mosques, their grounds were used for training Chechens, okay? And getting these Chechen fighters in mid-1990s into Balkan during our Balkan Wars. Some of these Chechen we used to send them into Russia to execute terror attacks. Well, some of these same Chechens now with ISIL, those same Chechens are being sent, have been sent into Syria and in Iraq. If you go and look at the roots of the Chechen terrorism, well, we did it with this mullah. We have been doing it, Mullah Fethullah Gulen, in all this region starting in mid-1990s under Operation Gladio B. And it, the documentation in terms of what this man has been doing, he's like an 82-year-old man. He only went through third grade education. First grade, second, elementary school, three grades, okay? He has semi-Alzheimer, okay? He's sitting in this castle in Pennsylvania. It's a major castle, and the compound is protected by all these mercenaries and with helicopter security. And this man owns and operates the largest charter school chain in the United States of America. And he is, as far as the reach is concerned in terms of building mosques and training terrorist grounds, this man is much bigger than entire operations conducted by Saudi Arabia under our guidance. But nobody will talk about that in the U.S. mainstream media, even though the facts for it is out there for everyone to see.
Can you tell us about your Kickstarter campaign? Because there's still some time because we're in early April 2016.
Yes. Tom, I started after doing this organization with the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, my congressional activities with CORS, federal CORS. I learned my lesson. So I ended up coming out of it by 2008 as less green, more of a libertarian, not taking the red pill or the blue pill. That aside, I believe, especially with mainstream media playing the most important role, of course, our academia plays that role too, that systematic brainwashing and Hollywood. But mainstream media, I said, okay, since they are blocking this information, I'm going to establish my own little blog sites and publish analysis, etc. That site, Boiling Frogs Post, grew. I ended up having some podcast producers, other analysts such as Pepe Escobar. And I said, in order for us to retain our independence, I don't want to do two things that under no circumstances I would do. One is, I don't want to get any grants from the foundation, so I'm not going to set up as NGO. Number one, as a 501c3, as you know, Tom, you're obligated to abide by all these rules the government gives you. So yeah, they are going to give you tax exemption, but that lunch doesn't come for free. It comes with the strings attached. So, and I don't want, and I was looking at alternative media landscape, and I'm looking at hundreds of millions of dollars given by George Soros to publications like ProPublica and et cetera. And I said, that is not alternative. There is nothing alternative. When George Soros gives you $12 million a year, I am sorry, I do not consider you independent or alternative. And I said, I don't want to have any, I don't want to be beholden to the corporate mega corporations advertisement, because then they're going to say, you covered these issues, we're not going to run ads. So I'm going to do it subscription based. Anyhow, this grew to a certain level, and we realized, and I got to know several good independent investigative journalists with solid track record for integrity, meaning they haven't been pocketed by New York Times or Washington Post, because just being in those institutions for a couple of decades is enough to kind of corrupt you, no matter how resistant you are. People like Pepe Escobar, roving international investigative journalist, people like Bill Conroy, 30-plus years reporting and exposing this farce called the war on drugs, the drug war, and DEA corruptions. And podcast producers, video producers, I said, what we want to do is, we have to get bigger. We have to be able to put out more information, because we are not partisan, we are independent. And I don't see a platform like this where you can bring this several great journalists, several great producers. So the idea of NewsBud was born. So I put together this, what I call Dream Team, and we launched a Kickstarter a month ago. It's based on all or nothing platform, meaning we reach our goal, we're going to right away set this up, and we're going to have international presence as well. And if we don't, everybody gets their money back. So we don't keep partial money. But it assures and ensures that, number one, we are not going to do any advertisement. Number two, we're going to say heck with people like George Soros. Number three, we are going to be accountable to the people, meaning if we don't produce and give people what they consider independent, factual, I don't want to use the word objective. The great things about my team is you won't see any partisan flavor. You have many libertarians, you have some anarchists, you have some people who consider themselves left-leaning, but they are not partisan. They don't vote Democratic Party. Every single one of these people I do know. And if people, they don't like what we are putting out, they are the ones who can put us out of business. It's not going to be the decision of George Soros or some, I don't know, a military industrial Boeing or Northrop Grumman who's running ad or Pfizer. It's going to be the public. And that's the only model I see where you can maintain true independence, meaning you're financed by the people, whether these individual donors who are giving $5 or the ones who are giving $10,000. Therefore, you are going to be serving the people where your sources, your income is coming from to run this operation. And we are hoping, and the details of it is on the Kickstarter page, and the website for it will be newsbud.com. People can look at the background and the track records of my journalists. Our journalists, not only that they are seasoned, but they are also known for their integrity. And whether it's, again, I mean, people, all they have to do is go and check out their track records. So I'm really selective with that, because I have been burned a lot by people, and that is within the mainstream media, people who come and get your trust, and then their editors pull the plug because their editors' real bosses tell them, we don't want you to cover that. I mean, during Bush administration, Tom, you have no idea how many of these puppet organizations, MoveOn.org and the forums and the Daily Coast, I was on the pedestal, because she was a way to show how horrible right-wing Republicans are. Okay, cheering. Yeah, this is happening to Sabelle Edmonds. The first few months of Obama administration, and I started writing about Rahm Emanuel and Obama administration and Obama himself and his track record in the Senate, whether it was on NSA or on whistleblowers. Suddenly, I got to be booed, and then it was taken suddenly my support by people who considered themselves Republican or on the right. And guess what? I mean, I moved to Oregon in 2012. I left the Sin City behind Washington, D.C. I'm in Eastern Oregon. I'm not in the liberal Western Oregon. And one of the cases we have been investigating has to do with the Malheur Refuge. But one of the things that I have become and I have seen, you know how people, they say seeing the light, is this paradigm of Republican, Democrats, the liberal. It is the notion of libertarianism, the true, in a true meaning, I'm not talking about just a party libertarian, just a libertarianism, is the only thing left that is in tune with what the founders of this country had intended. The only thing left, the only faction left that is in line with Bill of Rights, Constitution, all those great notions that we talked about. And so that has been, and I can say that with many of the real whistleblowers, because just like anything else, sometimes you have real whistleblowers, sometimes you have whistleblowers with agenda. With real whistleblowers, I have seen, having all these members, that many of them have come into this position and have come to see the light that way, that it is not what is being presented. And the only faction really left, the constitutionalists, the real American faction left in our country, is the libertarian movement. And we always emphasize libertarian with lowercase l.
Well, I'm going to, of course, be linking to the Kickstarter campaign and a link to you and a link to the book, Classified Woman, the Sybelle Edmonds Story. But before we go, is there a website, just in case people don't get to tomwoods.com/629, where I'm going to have all this stuff linked, tell us what would be one site. What about Boiling Frogs Post?
Boiling Frogs Post is the best place to see our work. But anything that has to do with our Kickstarter and our new organization is NewsBud, NEWSBUD, newsbud.com. There they can get the link to Kickstarter, our team members, etc. They will be all found there. And I really hope that we can have other sessions, because I have admired your work and I have been following your work, Tom, and I'm not saying this to be complimentary, for years and years. And that started, the last time I voted was in 2008, and it was Ron Paul. The only time in my life I have ever contributed to any campaign in terms of politics, was Ron Paul. And during my latest case investigating this whole Mount Hood case, Lavoie Finicum, I started working with some ranchers in Utah and some people, activists, attorneys over there. I have been passing your book, Nullification, because a lot of times people say we are so tired of people stating the problem. Many of us, not majority, but many of us among the irate minority group, we see the problems. But we want people to tell us what are the possible solutions, okay? What are the possible actions we can take? And you don't see many blogs. Everybody says what the problem is. Nobody's talking about this can do this and should be tried. Well, when you came out with your nullification movement, it was like this light bulb going inside my, in my head. I'm saying, you know, we all tried to tackle the whole system at once, like the whole Pentagon and the federal government and the foundation that has been rotten. But one of the best way actually is exactly this. If breaking it into bringing back that separation, the federal money has made it disappear. There is no independent separation between the states and the federal government. And also, we would be able to set example and show what can be done. Do you think we have problem with TSAs and their incredible violations of our rights and funneling? Do you know that the state can say, I don't want this practice of TSA in my airport? Actually, they have that, right? And I'm not preaching here to you because you're the expert. I am not. But the fact that all a lot of these things, solutions could be implemented in that level, which then would have set example for other states, and we could actually have domino effect of actually bringing about changes. But then I watched in horror how the mainstream media took this and put this spin that they have been successfully doing it, whether it's with the ranchers' protests or whether it's with the independence for through nullification, and made this being about sexism and racism. That card, and I know George Soros is the expert in implementing this through his tentacles, but to put this and make it for the people who don't bother reading the book and they don't bother to engage in critical thinking to be, oh yeah, these people want to bring the slavery back and the women are going to stay home and their uterus is going to be, you know, we're going to build fences around their uterus so they're not going to own their uterus. It was in a way comical, but yet frightening and sad to see how they took that, how they portrayed it, and how in some way successfully tried to kill a true, viable, possible solution. And throughout this 14 years of whistleblowing journey, this was one of those rare moments where I said, I really can see this as a way of getting where we want to get in terms of really bringing about change, real changes, and going back to what we are supposed to be. And this is exactly how they killed it. I mean, this is what they do. And this is the reason with NewsBud, we want to make them irrelevant. And I tell people with this rancher's case, today is them. And you may shrug and say, oh, these are some, you know, gun-loving, skinhead, blah, blah people. But this set the precedence. Next, they're going to come after the homeschoolers because homeschoolers have been intimidating. And they are on the list. Their time is coming. After that, it's going to be people who resist mandatory vaccination. By letting this happen, set this precedence, and let this precedence getting set with no resistance, with no media coverage, you have made it that much easier for the next group, whether it's going to be the homeschoolers. That's why it's all our problems when we see, when we witness incidents like this. It's not a problem that belongs to some small faction of militia or some medium-sized homeschooling groups. It's all our problems. As that famous saying goes, you know, first they went after this, I didn't say anything. Then they went after that, I didn't do anything. Then when they come for me, there was no one out there to do anything or say anything for me. Well, that's exactly what they are doing with Divide and Conquer. That's exactly what they're doing through their mainstream media mouthpiece. And with us divided and not really standing up for our constitutional rights, whether it belongs to some militia resistance or some ranchers in the West, we are actually setting ourselves up because we are next on the list. And I'm so thankful to you for giving me this opportunity, Tom.
Well, thank you, Sibel. I remember you and I had a good conversation about nullification on your show some years ago. So I'm glad to return the favor and introduce you to my listeners as well. Thanks so much. Good luck with the Kickstarter campaign. We'll talk to you again soon.
Many thanks, Tom. Have a great day.
All right, don't forget the goodies at tomwoods.com/629 and also my free history course at freehistorycourse.com. It's a free course from libertyclassroom.com, so if you already subscribe to that, you have this course already. But if you don't and you're curious, or heck, you just want a free course, it's about the presidents, but it's not the government-worshipping style of presidential course that you would have gotten in school. It's the actual stuff the presidents did. Their crimes against liberty are laid bare at freehistorycourse.com. You get access to 22 videos, or if you prefer, 22 MP3s so you can listen on the go, plus a bibliography containing a whole bunch of books that you can trust on various presidents. So it's worth it for all of those things. Check it out at freehistorycourse.com. Let's see, the rest of the week, what's going on? Tomorrow, we got Mark Thornton from the Mises Institute coming to talk about heroin and the drug war. And then on Friday, we're talking about – now, see, Friday, you might be tempted to skip it because I might not be able to think of a really zingy title and it might not sound interesting. Friday, I'm telling you, I loved the conversation that you're going to be hearing on Friday. It's about the subject of economics and morality. And it turned out to be fantastic. I mean, the two co-editors of the book that I was talking about were with me, so there were three of us, and we just got along great, and I asked them some good questions, and we just had a tremendous time. It was wonderful. So do not miss episode number 631. Do not skip it, or somehow I will find out, and I will be deeply disappointed. So just – you know what? The safe thing is just to listen to everything. That's the safe way to go. Listen to everything. Go to freehistorycourse.com. I'm going to stop talking now, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.